This is Rainbow Six Radio, bringing you
the Next Generation Podcast for talk, news, and information for all things Rainbow Six.
Hey, everybody. Icy Cat here, along with Cap Dan and our special guest host, Neely Bobber, returning back from episode 2. How's everybody doing today?
Pretty good. Doing quite well.
Nice, nice. So before we get started on the content of today's show, I just want to go over a little bit. We started our Rainbow Six Radio subreddit the other week, and we have seen a lot of great growth on there. So for anybody that is new to the podcast or has been maybe checking out the podcast but hasn't joined our community over on Reddit, please go ahead and do so. We've got a bunch of people over there, and it's a really great way for you guys, the listeners, to be able to engage with us, the co-hosts on the show, and have some dialogue. You can ask us some questions. We do also have a community Q&A thread pinned over there. So if you want to submit a question that may get answered on a podcast, we will go ahead and give you that answer if we select your question in a future show. In fact, we're going to do a few of those submissions today. I've also noticed a really cool trend of people are beginning to post gameplay clips over there. We've seen user SE Spider has been sharing some clips. Got a sweet three piece and a couple of others. We've seen our very own Cap Dan posting a couple of his clips.
Posted a couple today, yeah.
Including a sweet ace. Nice job. So for anybody that wants to share anything over there, just, you know, come on and join us. It's the Rainbow Six Radio subreddit. That is S-I-X, not the number six. So Rainbow Six Radio on subreddit. You can also find us on Twitter. I am IcyCat25 on Twitter. Or you can find Cap Dan's Ghost. That's K-A-P Dan's Ghost, like Cap Can, Cap Dan's Ghost, also on Twitter. Neely Bobber, do you have a Twitter presence as well?
I do, actually. It's just at Neely Bobber. It is my name now. It used to be something else. But yeah, no, that's my Twitter handle. You can also find me in the Discord. I'll be posting there as well.
So, Neely Bobber, you did join us back in episode 2 to fill in for Cap Dan while he was out. Recently, you just had experience going to the Rainbow Six Invitational, which is, of course, the big thing that's happening, you know, every year around this time. And I was just hoping that, you know, maybe you could share a little bit with us what that was like. Last week, we had so much to kind of unpack from what was revealed at the Invitational, and I would have loved to have had you on at the time, but there just was so much going on. But now that we've had a chance to kind of explore that and decompress a little bit, we'd love to hear just your insights into what that experience was like.
It's so hard to describe because we're all used to Siege in the capacity of sitting at home playing with friends, kind of like in that kind of environment. But when you're in a stadium, a legitimate stadium, that is filled with people who are just there for Rainbow Six, it's so incredible to be like anybody. You can literally just turn to anybody and just start talking Rainbow Six, and everybody's just like, oh, okay, that's cool. And you just start getting, you get to learn, meet new people. You get to meet people that you like, you didn't think you were going to meet, such as like your favorite streamers, such as, or YouTubers or anything like that. It's just a way different environment that I feel is like, the most amazing thing. I've never experienced anything like that. This is now my second Invitational. So it was really cool with that. It was a really great meeting, like, different pros. It was definitely great, you know, like, cause obviously there's lots of lineups for the merch stand. I spent way too much money on merchandise. But like, you just start talking with people and you just get to learn who these people are. And, you know, like nobody there cares what rank you are. Everyone's just there to have a great time and talk about Rainbow Six Siege.
Well, that was the question that I kind of had, is that in Siege, we kind of have a reputation for having a somewhat toxic community. I mean, it's a competitive game. Trash talking is part of it. You know, and there's, you know, in the actual game itself, there's like, you know, team killing and trolls and team injurers and, you know, all kinds of people that are just kind of being scuzzy people as you play the game, so to speak, and kind of making everybody else's gameplay experience worse. But what you're saying is that you had a super positive experience with the greater community as a whole that was sort of free of that.
Yeah, it's like anything on the internet, it's very different when you're face to face with people compared to when you're behind a screen. So having that buffer completely gone, people are very, very friendly. They're very, you know, very open. They're very, you know, like nobody's there to be condescending.
And I'm sure, too, that, you know, most of the people that are playing Rainbow Six Siege to troll are not the ones that are going to the Pro League events.
Exactly.
You know, it's what you said. It's the people that are actually passionate about the game, that actually care about the game. I know we were trying to go, was it the sectionals in Vegas, but it just didn't work out. And that, like, I was pretty excited for that. And it just didn't work out for us. But, you know, just people that are super excited to be around other people that are obsessed with this game. You know, there aren't going to be a bunch of, you know, trashy people there. So that's really cool that you're able to witness that and be a part of it.
It was really, really fun. Like, the cosplayers are always cool to talk to. But the funniest thing was, I was talking with some people, and I was like, imagine how many people here have messaged one each other, like, getting to, like, get good, or, you know, like, just as a joke. And I said that in line, and literally everybody started, like, literally everybody within, like, a 5-foot radius, if not further, were, like, just started laughing and started, like, joking about it. But, like, it is interesting to know that, like, you might be standing next to somebody that you've played with and had a great time, and you don't even know. And it's just that kind of environment that was really, really fun. And I always look forward to going, and again, did not disappoint this year.
So nice. You would say that it's just because it's a pro event, you don't necessarily have to be a pro player or have aspirations of being a pro player to go and get something out of it.
No, 100% not. Like, you have people from, like, totally different skill ranges. You have people who, like, you'll be talking, and they're like, and the first thing out of their mouth is, oh, I love playing this game, but I'm only a silver, so, you know, this and that. And then you get into guy next to him, oh, yeah, I was diamond last year, but, you know, and they just start talking about, you know, the diamond will start talking to the one guy about, like, oh, like, try doing this, changing your settings, do this. And, like, you know, people are like, oh, man, like, this game's getting so fast-paced. How do I adapt? And then you have people just, like, kind of chiming in. So, like, rank is not a factor when it's, like, person to person, because there's an actual human being in front of you, and you can be like, oh, okay, like, I want to help this person. I feel like we've kind of lost track of, like, when we're talking to somebody online, that it is another person that we're talking to, and we don't see it that way, so we don't, like, feel inclined to help. We're more or less empathetic of that. And having somebody in front of you talking about Siege, talking about how you can get better and how they got, like, what improved their game and operators they started out with that they felt comfortable with, because, like, there are people there who just started playing for, like, a year, if not less, and there was people there like myself who've been playing for over 4 years, and it was just it's a crazy mix of people.
So what's it like to be in the stadium, what looked to be on camera a ton of people? And these games are playing out, there's stakes on the line, they're advancing in brackets, these are the top performers in their field, and watching these games unfold live, like, an, you know, and I mean, it's an esport, but like a sporting event, and just, you know, big plays happen and the crowd goes nuts. I mean, what's that like?
It's exactly like you said, it's just like being at a big sports game. Like, when I first went, I was thinking, okay, it's going to be cool. Like, I don't think I'll be like – because I was into – I still am into esports, but I'm not the kind of person who's going to sit at home and just start yelling and cheering whenever somebody gets killed. But when it's live and, you know, like, everybody's kind of really intense. Everybody has their favorite team. You know, you have, like, Space Station Gaming, and you have, you know, Penta, and you got all these people who are super into their team. Then it's just like, okay, like, what side am I on? Like, I immediately went with Dark Zero. And I don't know anything about Dark Zero. They're not my team, but they were the hometown favorite besides SSG. So at first I'm like, oh, I'm all about Dark Zero. And then I was watching the Dark Zero games. I'm talking with people who are super into Dark Zero, and, like, they get a kill, and then everybody just roars up. And, like, literally it was almost like the whole arena was split sometimes. Like, you'd have, you know, the EU guys and the North American guys, it was just, or the, you know, the LATAM guys and the EU guys. And it's just, everybody had their team, and it's just so incredible, because you don't think you're going to get into it, and then you do. and then your voice hurts and you can't talk for like a day because you've just been screaming in an arena for 4 or 5 hours.
Next time, bring cough drops, my friend.
I always forget to stop yelling.
So one last question and then we'll kind of move on is, that I'm wondering is, less from a personal standpoint and more from a technical standpoint. We've seen how the Pro League games have sort of evolved over time as far as, you know, how they cast them, how they show them, you know, as far as what's going on with highlights, what they do as far as the actual production value of both either the stage event or the presentation of what's happening in the game, things like that. So clearly it's gotten better with time. Do you feel like there's anything that either really stood out to you as kind of like, you know, hey, you know, job well done, or maybe as something that's kind of lacking and you hope that they will maybe do a better job of either presentation or whatever in the future?
A bit of both. So the one thing that I say that they definitely improved on last year, they had 3 different casting stations, and so they took up a lot of the space. So you lost out on some seating. So sometimes it felt obviously like it was a lot of people there, so it was kind of cramped. But this year they just had one panel desk at the front. And that's where the casters sat, and that's where everybody did their thing. Whereas last year there was like an EU stand, there was a North American stand, and there was a LATAM stand. So you had these 3 giant plateaus that blocked out a good chunk of seats. And it was actually kind of – it was cool because you got to see them, but at the same time, you had to like sit in front of them. And like if you sat behind them and you were really, really close at those seats – you would just be looking at casters with a big screen in the background. So I do like this year that they narrowed it down and made it so there was more seating. The one thing that I will say that I wasn't a huge fan of, and again, it's more or less a personal thing. Last year's stage was a lot nicer. It was a lot more, how can I put it? I wouldn't say user-friendly, but like looking at it, was much more like I could see everything that was going on, whereas this year is everything was on one screen. So they had 3 screens kind of together and there was a gap in between each one, whereas last year it was I believe 2 screens, but then they had like the operators on the side and like each person had their head above the operator that they picked with the health bar in it. So like the screen wasn't obscured at all. Like you were watching if you did not care about anything on the side, you could just watch the screen, and if you were like, oh, who's out, who's in, you could look over and see the name being blanked out, and then you can be like, okay, it's this versus this, whereas this year is all on the same screen, so you kind of got lost once in a while, and I will say that was, for me, a little bit, of its downfall, but other than that, though, like, everything else was, like, cranked up to 11, like, stage production, the amount of stuff they had there to do, last year they had the big one was the Ubisoft store. So like the merch store was an actual store that they cleared out. That's usually for the hockey stuff. And then they put all Ubisoft stuff in. So that was big. So other than that, everything else was quite big and like redone, cranked up to 11. Those were my only grievances was the screen, like the stage itself wasn't as good as last year.
Hopefully one day we also will be able to go to the invitationals. Going back to some of the stuff about our subreddit, you know, we created a Q&A thread, and, you know, a bunch of people have been writing into it. And the question that I'm bringing up, so this one is from Steel Switch. His question, or their question, is Clash deactivated for the 3rd time. Does Clash need a complete rework?
Well, that's definitely an interesting topic. Yeah. Why don't you open with this one, Dan?
Before we even get into that, actually, I'm just going to read this tweet because it's hilarious. I mean, it's serious, but it's hilarious. You know, Rainbow Six tweeted 8 hours ago, we have deployed a fix for the recently discovered Clash exploit on the test server today. We have tested the fix thoroughly, but to make sure, we are offering a bounty for new reports of exploits pertaining to Her Shield. And
well,
then
there
they
you go.
Did a picture, and they're giving a reward. They're giving a charm. You have until Tuesday, March 3rd. To come out with an exploit for Clash, and they'll give you a whatever, some sort of charm as a thank you.
Well, I think that they're definitely going to want to make sure that whatever caused the exploit problem on the test server, that they're for damn sure not letting that make it over to the live build in a couple of weeks.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But here's the thing. This is the third time since Clash has been released, the third time that they have had to take her off of the game to fix her because she is so broken.
And now broken from an exploit glitch perspective. We're not even necessarily talking about her ability, which you can argue is or isn't broken, but like the ability to exploit with her.
Exactly. So the fact that they're doing that, and now they're asking the community to find more exploits so this doesn't happen again. Now, this question, yes, it is a smart move, but in pertaining to this question, you know, Clash is broken. What can we do to fix it? Maybe we should just get rid of the damn operator and come up with a new one.
See, I don't think we should get rid of her. What, honestly, her ability, if you look, if you're sitting down at a desk with a group of people and you're trying to think of new ideas, her ability sounds really fun. She can walk she can walk into a room, she can gather all this intel, she can slow them down with her little taser, and like she can really maneuver the attackers to move somewhere else, in theory.
In theory,
She again, she's like a Montaigne, but just with a taser at the end of her shield. I think a rework is something that is needed rather than, but there, she's actually very open to a lot of ideas, I feel. Well, like when she first got released, I thought like when me and Icy Cat, and I believe maybe even Dan was in on the conversation, like I thought she was going to be somewhere that she placed down almost something like a shield and then like went across and created almost like a half wall, but it's see-through. And like it could have some sort of ability like that. That's what I thought it was going to be. You could do something like that where like it's an indestructible door, but you can see through it. Similar to a mirror window. You could use it similar to that. You could have her like just kind of get rid of the taser, but she doesn't have the knockback similar to a that she has now. So maybe like she has no taser, but she's similar to Monty where she's more resistant to things. You can make it so her shield is can only handle so much damage, similar to Blackbeard. Like there's a lot of things they can do. She's not as frustrating to play against as she once was because I feel there's a lot more operators now that can counter her.
Right.
But I don't think she's hopeless. I honestly don't think she's hopeless.
Well, we know that at least on a couple of occasions, and I don't know if this most recent occasion is the same thing or not, but part of what was going on with the glitch with her is that it was made so that you could, and again, this is the glitch. This is not her intended ability, but there's something about the way she functions that allows them to keep doing these kinds of glitches that is not showing up with other operators. But there was something that allowed her to essentially fire through like her gun through her shield, right?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's like Monty firing through his fully extended shield. I mean, it's just like that's completely game breaking. So that's one aspect to it. And then another aspect to it that, and Ubisoft themselves even addressed this, is that there wound up becoming an unintentional style of play with Clash that they see as, like, it's just not what they intended, and like they feel bad that it's sort of evolved a little bit, is that they say the whole concept of the spin 360 while you draw your weapon. Like, the balance to her was supposed to be that if you wanted to fire your gun, you had to swap the shield, which created a moment of vulnerability for her so that you might be forced to step out of the doorway, back behind the wall, draw your weapon, and then, you know, like you had this decision you were going to make. But now with people having adopted this spin 360 thing where it's just like they do it all in one motion and it's like this, you know, 360 no scope thing, they're kind of like, oh, that's not what we intended for that to be used as. Oops.
What if they made it so she can't put it on her back? What if they made it because she only has the shield and the gun? So right. You have to hit the button to activate it to bring it up. But then when you don't have it, you're not holding it up similar to like a way Blitz does. Maybe like once you deactivate, you're holding it off to your side. And then you can – she just shoots with the one hand and you just shoot. And then when you want to activate, you bring it back. You put the gun away, bring it back up, let it do its thing.
Don't you feel though that that's just a variation on the problem? Because then if you have it up to the side, then instead of 360-ing – you just have to do these 90-degree rotations. You know, I fire, I turn 90 degrees, and then I spin back 90 degrees, fire, turn 90 degrees again. You know, like I mean, yeah. Aren't we trading one problem for another?
Well, it's similar to the way when you're a shield and, like, you have to reload, and somebody comes running at you, generally their first instinct is turn to the right because that's where your shield is, because when you're reloading, the shield is still there. But, like, if it's sideways, it's only covering so much your body. They can still shoot your head, and they can still shoot your legs.
Well, I mean, yes and no. It's still a head-to-toe shield because it doesn't collapse like Monty's does. And what you're talking about on a reload sequence is a moment in time, right?
Yeah,
you're taking advantage of that moment in time. But in what you're describing, when she has her gun out, she just holds it to her side. That's not a moment in time. It's just – it's always there.
It's just there. But at the same time, it's protecting much less of you. So, yeah, you can do that little trick. But it's much more like you're still in a much more vulnerable state than if you just put it on your back and turn around and hide in a corner or like, you know, like do the spin. It's the same thing, but I feel it's much more counterable than this unintended thing, in my opinion.
I would say I would meet you as a compromise. And like we're all just in the land of hypothetical, right? Because we're answering a community question of like, does Clash need a rework? But I would say I would meet you in a compromise of if she held it off to her side, but it was canted so that it was on an angle that exposed her legs and shoulders. So it wasn't like straight up and down, like completely protecting her side. So if she turned to the side, there's still a vulnerability.
That's what I was getting at was she was holding it in such a way where like the shield isn't height wise, it's length wise. So it's only covering like maybe her torso, if that. Mm-hmm. Like she's holding it off to the side. She's not holding it up and down. She's just holding it off to the side, like similar to her way she's holding it in her operator pick. You know how she kind of has it there and it's just whatever, like something like that where it's not not covering anything specific.
Mm-hmm.
I hate Clash. I just get rid of it. Just the answer to the question, though, is all three of us agree that Clash needs to be reworked in some way. Like, because I mean, the thing that separates her from Montaigne is her ability to stun. I don't think you can get rid of that. Maybe get rid of her SMG, give her a pistol, and instead of it being all clear, it's only clear where she can see through, like when she is holding it up fully extended. So it gives her that kind of little thing that Montaigne can see, and that is what she can see, and that's how she can stun people. And not everyone can see through the shield then. And maybe that'll cause some sort of change.
I mean, T'Chaka is getting a massive rework, right? And he was like, you know, just like the worst operator that nobody picked. And
the meme of the game, yeah.
Right. And so they did specifically say that they're now in a place where they want to take a look at reworking operators that are either performing poorly, such as T'Chaka, or that are extremely frustrating to play against. And right. Clash could arguably fall into that category.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Not only is she frustrating to play against, she's not all that much fun to play as.
Right.
And I of course you want to be careful in saying that, because anything you say like that, somebody out there invariably is like, I'm a Clash main, I'm a god with her, I get kills all the time and whatever. I don't mean to take anything away from people that do like enjoy playing her, but I'm just sort of speaking maybe for the wider audience that's just like, eh, she's just not really all that fun to play, you know? Right. So do I think Clash needs a complete rework? Yeah, I think so. And however they rework her, I hope that now with this being the third time that she's been glitched or exploited or whatever it is, that the way in which they rework her takes whatever is happening into consideration and makes that like a non-option anymore.
Right.
So the last question that we're going to take today for Q&A is Metaltooth 4 says that he's not sure if it counts as a question, and it does, but he wants to know if we have any suggestions on how to get a higher rank, because he feels like his skill level is higher than Silver 4, which is where he's at now, and he doesn't have a full squad of friends to play ranked with. So I keep getting solo queued with pretty bad teammates, and I lose about 60% of the matches, which puts me off ranked a lot. Do we have any suggestions? I guess I'll start with the first answer to this, in that I always recommend for people that feel like they're stuck at a lower level than what they're really at is to go ahead and get that squad of friends. And he says he doesn't have that, but the way to do it is when you solo queue, whether it's in casual or ranked, what I would do is if I have an enjoyable game experience with somebody else on that team, and, you know, I'm assuming that you're playing on open mic. Like, I'm assuming that you're in game chat and there's some team communication going on. I'm hoping that you're not in the unfortunate situation where the other four people are in a private chat and you're just by yourself and there's nothing but dead silence. If there is, that makes this hard. But is if you have an enjoyable experience with somebody on your team, or even if you don't have that verbal and audio communication, and like, you know, the doc gave you the stim pistol when you were down and you needed it, or you pinged the wall and they threw the impact grenade at it, you know, and there was even nonverbal communication that went well, what have you, send those players friend requests and build up a queue of friends that you can play with more regularly. And it might be slow going at first, but because it's such a heavily coordinated game on team play and team communication, as long as you're solo queuing, you're going to find yourself struggling to find that. And as soon as you get up with even one other person or two other people that you can play with regularly, it's going to make all the difference to the gameplay in the world, because you can coordinate strategies and you can, absolutely, you know, have that communication going. That's my kind of, I guess, suggestion.
It's very interesting because everybody's different, right? Like, everybody wants to be diamond, but understanding, almost everybody wants to be diamond.
I know my lane. It's not diamond.
and that's what I'm getting at is know your skill cap. I know my skill cap is plat 2, plat 3, somewhere around there. Don't feel like that means don't try and get diamond, because that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying know where you're comfortable with. If you're not comfortable with silver, obviously keep pushing. But how you do that is there's a couple things. Watch Pro League. Watch your streamers, watch your YouTubers, watch what they do. Not necessarily try and do exactly what they do, but watch how they assess things. Watch how they understand where player positioning is. Pro League was a big help for me. Understanding maps. Map knowledge is key. Go through map, go into a map by yourself or with, you know, in a terrorist hunt, just set it to one map and just walk through it and figure out lanes that you're like, okay, maybe we can push here. Try and find some sight lines that are kind of new that make it so you're less intrusive and you're a little bit more protected. Go into terrorist hunt, you know, practice aim. And like you said, friend request people that help you just friend request the guy who gets 13, 14, 15, 16 kills in a game. Friend request the people who help you, who are a good support, and then just play with that. Doesn't mean you have to play with everybody you're going to friend request, because you're going to have people that you don't mesh with.
Yeah, that's very solid. So, Captain, I know that you've had a little bit of a relatable journey in that you started playing the game after kind of our core group had already been playing it for the better part of like 3/4 of a year. So you kind of came into it sort of behind the 8-ball and had to kind of, you know, get up there the game has such a steep learning curve, right?
Oh, it really does.
Yeah. So,
what's
your advice?
The first couple of months were a nightmare, to be honest. I had no idea what it was going on. I'd be like picking operators because they look cool, and everyone's like, why are you picking Pulse? Like, I don't know. He looks like Vin Diesel. but, you know, it gets to a point where, like, if you are really interested in getting better at the game, I mean, I'm kind of just going to jump on the backs of both of you guys and, you know, watch Pro League. Find people that you enjoy their style and watch their videos. I'm not doing this for marketing, but the reason I am as good as I am now is because Icy Cat took me under his wing and I watched all of his videos, every single one.
Aww.
And you know, even to, you know, bring Neely Bobber into it too, there was a period of time, like, I was like, Pro League is for, like, people that are way better than me. And Neely Bobber was like, just watch it. I started watching, and then there's a couple of times that, like, Neil and I went in and started playing, and he'd do some call out that happened in some sort of Pro League setting, and I understood what was going on, you know, and just making those small connections really helps. Map knowledge is the number one thing, though. Map knowledge, map knowledge, map knowledge.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, sorry, go ahead, Neil.
I was going to say, understanding too, when, like, having a main is always good. Yep. Like, I'm maining Buck and maining, you know, maining Clash, maining whoever you main is awesome. But understanding when there's a role that needs to be filled is a big one. Because there's been so many times, and I didn't mean to cut you off there, but...
No, you're fine.
There's been so many times where you're playing ranked, and all of a sudden, like, you'll see, like... You know, like, for example, you'll have an Ella, you'll have a Pulse, you'll have a Vigil, you'll have a Kavera, and then you have a Rook. And you're like, okay, we have four Roamers and one Anchor. I may, and knowing to be like, okay, I'm going to switch to maybe a medium to or a tankier role, and I'm going to stay closer to objective. It might not be the winning difference, but it's going to help you know when to change and when to switch it up, because... That's a key part of Siege, is knowing, okay, this is not working. Let's adapt.
So now I want to introduce a new segment that we're going to do. Somebody in the Rainbow Six Radio podcast section has put up the suggestions for the podcast. And they had one that really spoke to me. And Captain and I were talking about this. They're like, yeah, let's make this a thing. And that's Pro Tip of the Podcast section. And so that's a new segment I want to introduce today, where we are going to just throw out one pro tip. It can be a pro tip on an operator or a map or a way to use a gadget or whatever it might be. And so we're going to try to see how this goes and see what kind of reception we get on it. My pro tip for today is a setup on Cafe. So Cafe is, of course, a really popular map. And one area that sees a lot of action is the train museum section. And a really great way to defend that part of the map is, of course, from above the site. You want to make sure that you've got that trap door locked down above train room. So you want to have presence up there, right? You know, anybody that comes in to take out that trap door, you want to be able to deal with them. But it's also a really excellent place to push back from. And so in doing this setup, I would recommend you don't ever do it solo, because if you're focused on this part of the map, you may get flanked from some of the other sections, like from White Stairs or from Red Stairs while you're doing this, and you don't want to get pushed out while you're doing it. So have backup, maybe a second roamer up there with you. And there is a L-shaped bar countertop there right next to that window on that side of the map. And if you go ahead and use a shotgun or an impact grenade and you rip up that floor, you will then see directly underneath that L-shaped countertop the window below that is the main window used to push into train room. And if anybody hops in through there, you can go ahead and get them from above, which is a really interesting and surprising place to hit them from. And it works really well if you've got some barbed wire on the floor or something like that that sort of slows them down, so that when they vault in, they've got to take a second and deal with something in front of them that slows them down for just a second and allows you to pick them off as they vault into that window. I would also say that you can go ahead and pre-break both of the windows on that side of the map. So what I'm talking about by pre-break is when you hit the bottom of the window twice and you've prepped it so that a third will, you can vault through it because that would count as your third hit, right? So you pre-break that window, two hits on the bottom, and then you go over by the piano in the corner and you pre-break that window, two hits on the bottom. The windows look like they're solid, but then if there winds up being somebody on that window that doesn't vault in, where you could get them through the hole that you have above that window, you also retain the option of being able to burst through one of the two windows above them and land next to them, take them out, and then quickly hop back in. So that is my pro tip for defense on Cafe for the train room side of the map. Okay, so moving up to an interesting topic that we have going on right now. We have so we had the year five panel. We talked about everything that was going on there, and year five being a hybrid year. We've got the two ops in season one, the two ops in season two, and then they're switching to the year six plan for seasons three and four, where it will only be one operator per season. And then they showed year six. That is also the plan for year six, one operator per season instead of the two. I don't know. That's just such a unexpected change, especially given that they said, and they still continue to say, their plan is to build up to 100 operators. And even after announcing that, they're still standing by that commitment, even though we've got, you know, for the next 2 years, again, you know, seasons one and two will still have two operators, but the next six seasons after that are only going to be one operator each. I mean, what do we think about that?
I think it's a good thing. I don't mind them slowing the pace a bit from the, like, releasing two operators at a time. Only reason being is because I'm going to bring us back to Clash. Clash isn't that old. Clash is fairly new, and she's already getting a rework. So I feel like these ideas, they're having two operators, you're pumping these ideas out when you can only test so much.
I wouldn't say Clash is already getting a rework. That's,
well, no, like, she's already been, she's been banned out, and there's already talks of a rework for her. So I'm not going to say she is getting reworked, but there's already talks of getting a rework, whereas Tachanka's been in for 4 years, and now he's getting a rework. Granted, he's, you know, there's always been like, oh, let's rework Tachanka, but at the same time, like, he was never been inherently broken. Where Clash is fairly new, and I feel like we're going to run into this issue, like, if we kept going with this, two operators, we'd run into this issue a lot sooner, a lot more. So moving it back down to one operator, it brings the development team thing, okay, we have a lot more time to hone in what this operator can and cannot do, rather than worrying about two operators, and then you have all these other operators that you have to fix. It makes it so they can, one team can focus on one, like the new one, and another team can focus on anybody who needs a rework or balancing. So it just opens it up, and it's going to make the game much more fun to play.
Well, I think that when we take a look at the operators we've seen recently released, we've had a lot of what I might call underperformers. We're looking at like Amaru, Warden, kind of Nuck. Some of these operators are like, yeah, okay, they're the new kid on the block for that season. Moving on. You know, like, nobody's really like, and again, like I mentioned before, somebody's always been like, oh, I'm a Nuck main, what are you talking about? She's amazing. But like, there's
that would be me.
You know, when you think about some of the operators that have been released so far, they come out and people are like, yeah, I don't know how great this of an addition this is to the game. Like, you made a new operator, but give me Sledge, you know, or whatever it might be. And I feel like if you have less operators, you might have a chance to make more of an impact by taking your time and putting something together that's maybe a little more polished, that fits the need a little bit better, that they can spend more time on testing, focusing on one instead of two. I mean, that doubles their time to be able to, you know, iron out the kinks and really explore and experiment with it before they even put something together for release. You know, I guess so. I feel like it's something that maybe on the surface looks a little scary, but when you really look at the big picture as a whole, it's maybe not a bad thing.
Right. I totally agree with that.
And I've also noticed, too, like you were saying, it's happened more recently where there's a lot of, like, operators. Like, looking back, you know, Kaid, Nomad, that was a good season. Like, both operators are good. Kaid was fit more into meta than Nomad, but Nomad is still really good. Gridlock and Mozzie. Mozzie fit into the meta a little bit more, but Gridlock was still really good. And then we get Warden and Nook, and nobody knows really where to put them. Warden is very underwhelming, and Nook is kind of a very interesting learning curve. And she's not, like, great. And then we get Goyo Amaru, and Goyo kind of fits into the thing, and Amaru is just a kind of a fun little operator to play. But then we get Kali and Wamai, and again, we have the Nook Warden situation where it's like, which one is really that good? Like, granted, right, they both have flashy gadgets, but nothing really sticks out.
It's just different Jaeger and different Glass. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, and now we're getting Oryx and Iana, whereas I feel like they're going to be both really good, but we might run into the same issue. Really cool at first, but then I'm going to pick this operator, or, like, you know, they're not going to gravitate. Whereas I think Iana is going to be interesting. I don't think she's going to be, like, super pushed into a meta. At least I don't think she will be. Mm-hmm. She offers a lot, but I think there's going to be so much more utility that's just going to be way better to pick. And I think we're going to run into the same issue. So, yeah, bringing it down is going to avoid that situation completely, I feel.
Another interesting thing, I think, with the reduction of operators per season is it makes you re-examine the season pass. Because previously the season pass, part of the draw of that was that you get the 1 week early access to the 8 new operators over the course of the year. But now there's only going to be 6 operators for this season pass. And of course, that means there will be 4 next year for that season pass. And so I think the question becomes, is the season pass still kind of worth it with less operators? And it looks like they've changed some things up.
Yeah. Now I don't think you're getting Rainbow Six credits anymore. And so that's kind of a big thing. So how are we supposed to, you know, pay for these operators or, you know, the elite skins and stuff if we're not able to get that? And, you know, buying these operators on Renown, like, I mean, you pretty much have to grind for an entire year to have enough to pay for one operator.
Well, no, so. I don't know about that. 25,000 renown isn't that hard to come by, especially if you're completing the club challenges or the in game challenges. That's and have true. A booster or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. I do think, though, that, and I know we kind of talked about this a little bit previously before starting this podcast today. Just about the new kind of battle pass thing is actually if everything is according to, you know, what we were talking about, it seems like you'll still somewhat get the same amount of rainbow credits. You just have to, it's not just given to you. You technically, like, in a way, have to earn it by getting to specific levels and stuff like that.
Well, so what they're doing with the Battle Pass privileges, because Battle Pass is now, like, we had it this last season. We saw the first full one, right? So, you know, that's going to be kind of a thing going forward. So Battle Pass privileges are now part of the Year 5 Pass, and they say they get 30% faster Battle Pass progression and a 30% discount on the premium Battle Pass track, which, of course, unlocks more content for you. And part of that is that we saw in this last season's Battle Pass that at certain gold markers along that premium Battle Pass track, you do wind up unlocking some rainbow credits, so you wind up earning some back.
Right.
So then additionally to the 6 operators we get in Year 5, there's the 5% Renown boost, the Alpha Pack boost of 0.3%, the 10% discount for VIP in the shop. They're also giving us 6 uniforms and headgear plus the hexagonal charm. I don't feel like that's really anything different than what they've done before. They've always had seasonal If you have the year pass, you know, you get some seasonal headgears and, you know, things like that. There is, of course, the season pass weapon skin. This year it's called Oris Alabaster. So there has been a seasonal pass skin we've seen in previous years. And then there's they're calling it the Jaeger Byte, B-Y-T-E, Byte set, which is a looks like a full uniform, headgear, weapon skin, and charm for Jaeger. And the price of the pass has also been reduced from $29.99 down to $24.99, so it's $5 cheaper. So we're not getting the 8 operators as part of this. We're getting 6, and then they've got the battle pass stuff in there. I don't know. Do we think that once you kind of look at the entirety of that package, along with the price reduction, $5 price reduction to be fair, but not getting the rainbow credits as part of this, not getting those other 2 operators as part of this, do we think it's still kind of worth it?
It is. Like, I think it's worth it because the battle pass, buying the premium or not, it's going to be, you know, you get a lot of great stuff out of it. Unfortunately, with the last battle pass, I wasn't able to finish it off. Like, I got the premium, but I literally only made it to like level 15.
Because this does not give you the premium battle pass. You still have to buy the premium battle pass. This just gives you a 30% discount on it.
And I do have a bit of an issue with that because only in the premium you get the Rainbow Six credits. Right. Whereas before, you just bought it and you got them. So there's people out there who just they don't want to do that. They don't want to buy the premium stuff. They want to keep it free. They just want to. It is what it is. I don't want to dump a ton of money into this. And now that they don't get something, so it's starting to feel like, again, they don't want to feel that way. But I feel like they're really starting to push. Push people, like, separate them in a sense of like segregating, like, oh, like, these are the people who paid for it and these are the people who didn't. And then there's going to be that, like, the underlying pressure of like, oh, well, I want those credits. I have to pay for these now and I have to buy 2,400 rainbow credits to get 600 credits. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things where people want something where they're like, they see something and they're like, oh, I want that. Like, I do that with skins. Like, I don't need a skin, but I'm like, I want that skin. I'm getting that skin. Mm-hmm. So, like, that was the thing with the battle pass. I was really upset because I couldn't finish the battle pass and I wanted that invitational skin because I have last year's invitational skin, but I didn't have time to finish it. So there's going to be that thing of, oh, well, I want the Rainbow Six credits, so I'm going to pay for this. And there's going to be that guy who's like, well, that's BS. I don't want to do that. Like, why can't I just get my Rainbow Six credits with my year pass? And that's what I use throughout the year because I don't use these Rainbow Six credits that often. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's a good thing and it's also a bad thing. So
let me ask the question this way. Do you feel like you're likely to pick up the year 5 pass with all that it offers?
Yeah, me personally, yes. Okay. I've bought it every year. I've always seen value in it. I don't have to worry about, like Captain said, like, it's a lot of renown. Like, I have a lot of renown, but, like, I don't have that much renown. Like, I have 150,000 renown type thing, which, granted, that's a lot, but with how much these packs cost, how much certain skins cost, you know, that's 25,000 renown out the door just for skins sometimes. Mm-hmm. So, if not more. So having an extra 20,000 for the operator is, I don't have to worry about that. So to me, it makes sense. It cuts off a lot of the grind. You know, having, the renown boost, granted it's only 5%, and the 10% discount in the shop is nice because some things in there are discounted already. So having that extra 10% is nice, but the alpha pack thing, I feel like they need to boost that up a bit or get rid of that, make that the standard amount, is the 0.3% lower. And then when you buy the pass, you get 5 packs. Have something like that. Like, I think this 0.3 stuff is just, that's kind of redundant to me.
I think I will probably be picking it up as well. I do look at it as like, if I already have to pay for the battle pass outside of this, for the premium track, of course, you know, it's like, am I really getting that much for that? But as a content creator, I do like to make sure that I have the immediate access to those operators as soon as they come out. that helps me for the video content that I make. I have supported them in years past. I do believe in continuing to support the game as it goes forward in development, because these sorts of content, I guess a season pass isn't exactly a microtransaction, but you know, that's how you support the ongoing development of the game. You know, if they're supporting a game for 10 years, they can't just survive on the $60 everybody paid for their initial purchase, or the game doesn't even sell for $60 anymore, to be honest with you. They can't, you know, survive on that and support 10 years of development going forward after that. So they have to kind of keep it going. And this is my way of saying, hey, I vote to keep this game around and for you to keep making cool new stuff for it. And even if there's not a whole ton of value in this pass, I'm supporting the development of future operators and future map reworks and future, you know, features and whatever it might be. So how about you, Captain? You think you're going to pick up the pass with the changes?
Well, your purchases brought Clash, so think about that one, Ice. No, ooh, I'm kidding.
I don't even know what to say to that. That's
sick burn.
That's yeah.
I think I'm still gonna buy the year 5 pass. So just so I'm clear, the year 5 pass is different from the premium battle pass, correct?
Yes, when you buy the year 5 pass, you get 30% faster progression on the battle pass. But if you want the premium track of the battle pass, you still have to buy that separately. But you get a 30% discount on it when you do.
When you do. Okay. So I think this year I probably will. I'll probably buy the pass and see how everything goes. Mm-hmm. And I think based on how much of a benefit I get from it. Because, I mean, we play this game at least twice a week, you know, so I feel like our progression, we can get pretty far. So I don't think that's the problem. I think before it was all bang for buck.
Yeah.
And it kind of seems like, because I'm looking at prices for certain things, you know, so the Battle Pass is now $5 less. Buying 600 rainbow credits is $5. So maybe, you know, we'll see. I'll do it this year and I'll see how it is. You can come back to me a year from now and we'll talk about it.
That is a super fair answer. Okay, very cool. So with the focus on year 6 then dropping to 4 ops, because that's not going to be a hybrid year like this year will be. So the shift there is that they want to focus on working on core mechanics and gameplay. And they cited that. They said, you know, we're going to draw back on the operators being delivered, but we really want to give you new core mechanics and gameplay content. And we don't really know exactly what that might mean. But what are some examples of some things that you guys would like to see? And I mean, this can be super speculative. This can be super wishlisty. It can be like, that's never going to happen, but I'd like to see it anyway. But like, what would be like a new core mechanic or a new gameplay feature or something?
So by feature, are you possibly talking about game modes or something they add? Or
it could be game modes. It could be new mechanics of movement in the game, or a new way, like map bands that they're bringing or replays that they're bringing. Like I could consider those gameplay features and core mechanics. You know, it could be like almost anything.
Okay, because I don't like, you guys saw when the Invitational, when they were talked about the game events and things like that.
Yep.
The thing that they are going to be coming out with next, or like the big one, is the Golden Gun game, similar to when we played James Bond GoldenEye back in the day. You have the Golden Gun, everybody has like the one shot deagle, and it sends you flying. It's great, great loads of fun.
Did you actually get to play that?
No, that wasn't okay. Live. Although I would have 100% waited like 3 hours in line to play that.
I figured you would have.
I'm actually super excited for that. I cannot wait to play it. But things that they could do is honestly take a page out of like what other games are doing. Like have a gun game. Have like a 3v3 like a 3v3 mode. Things like that. Maybe like story progression. Things like that. Like gun game would be actually really, really fun. You start off as a recruit. And then once you kill somebody, you switch over, like you turn into a different operator, and you know, you turn to Capitao or you turn into whatever. And first one to reach T'Chanko wins. And
that would be awesome. I would play that game for sure.
You know what I mean? Like something like that. And
that sounds more like an arcade playlist event than a core gameplay mechanic, though. But okay.
But there'd be that, or like have a game mode where it's, you know, 5v5. But there is no limit of who you can pick. You can pick defenders. You can pick attackers. Like, I could have Rook on my team next to Nook. You know what I mean? Rook and Nook.
You just did that because it rhymed.
I did that, and I didn't realize it rhymed until after I said it. I will admit that.
No regrets, friend. No regrets.
No regrets. Rook and Nook. No regrets.
No regrets.
But you know what I mean? To have something like that. I think, like... Focus, as what we brought up in episode two, focus more on having fun, less on the competitive side. Granted, still have your competitive stuff like kind of come out, but like have these fun little game modes. And I feel like, again, it doesn't change main gameplay mechanics, but it also adds new ones in different modes.
Okay.
So like, you know, have a classic or a mode where you can't ADS and you move really slow and you can't run. You know what I mean? Like, things like that, just like really silly off the wall stuff, but nothing, you know, but have its own event. So I think that's what I'm looking forward to.
Okay. Those things. I have a wide range of things that I would like to see. And when I think of core mechanics and gameplay, I think less about events, because I think arcade playlist events and things like that are, they're sort of their own experimental playground to have fun with, you know, but for when like I think, or whatever, like Stadium was a month, you know, whatever. Right, well, on weekends only for a month, but you know, when I think of core mechanics and gameplay, and keep in mind we're talking about not having new maps, not having two operators a season, you know, if they're only doing reworked maps and what have you, so we're talking about focusing more on the way the game plays and the experience that you have in the content of the game rather than outside in a special temporary event. I would like to see one thing I heard you say, Neely Bobber, that I'm totally on board with is you mentioned something briefly about story content. I would love to see some kind of story content mode added to the game where maybe once a season you get a special single player situation where it's like, okay, here's the mission where Fuse and Hibana and Ying went on something and they did whatever, and it gives some lore and some backstory and some cutscenes, but then you play out the mission, and the mission is maybe it's something on an existing map, but I think it would be even cooler if it was like how they build a map for an event. Like, it would just be a map for a mission. Like, that is just specific to that. And, almost like something in the scope of, just maybe kind of what they did for Outbreak, where it's like a more of a, like a linear mission rather than a single building, but not on that level where there's like hundreds of enemies and everything's happening all over the place. Like, I'm not looking for that, but just something a little bit bigger than one building, but still gives some lore to the operators. That'd be one thing I would love to see. I don't think it ever will happen, but I would love to see. Another thing I would love to see is a rework to custom games. I think custom games is completely lacking in the way it's set up. I don't know why in this day and age you have a custom game mode in a competitive multiplayer game where if you want to change your maps, you have to scrap the lobby and create a brand new lobby. And you can't just pick like, oh, I just want to play this other map instead now, but it wasn't in the list already, so you got to scrap it. Or if you want to swap teams, you know, like, you know, there's some things you can do and some things you can't do. The way that the rule sets are all explained, why can I not go into custom game and just pick a little check mark box that says play as ranked rules, play as, you know, quick match rules, play as newcomer playlist rules, whatever it might be, right? Why don't those exist in there as presets that I can just toggle on instead of having to mess with 15 different settings to get something that's close enough?
Like having the presets already in the game.
Right. They're just there. you can select them. I would love to see something where it's also set up that there's maybe, say, an unlimited ammo mode, an unlimited gadget mode. And people are like, oh, it's going to get insane if you have unlimited gadgets. Like, everything is going to be deployed all at once. And you can just have it like, hey, if you have, like, I don't know, take Valkyrie. She can throw out three Valkyrie cameras. As soon as she throws out that fourth one, the first one disappears, and now it's still only three that are out at any given time. And if you throw right. out a fifth one, the second one you threw out disappears. You still only have three at any given time. But what it allows you to do is it allows you to experiment, like, oh, I messed up my throw on that one. That didn't land on the tree like I wanted it to. Let me try that throw again. Whereas now it's like, oh, I threw out my three Valkyrie cams. I only landed one of them the way I wanted to. Now I've got to kill myself and reload the match to try again. You know, stuff like that. I feel like that should be a feature in custom games.
I could see that for sure.
And I'll just give one other one, and then, Captain, I'll let you take a turn for what you might like to see. But I would also like to see them change the way that they're approaching the concept of ranked versus casual, and where people fall into that right now. Because right now, everything is sort of homogenized to the point where all the modes sort of feel like all the other modes. Ranked feels like Pro League Lite. Unranked feels like ranked. Unranked is practice for ranked, right? And Quick Match feels like ranked Lite. And they all sort of feel kind of similar-ish. Oh, there's 14 maps in Quick Match instead of 12 maps in ranked. Oh, there's, three-minute rounds in ranked, and it's 3:30 in Quick Match. But, like, that's not different enough. You know, it really needs – casual should be casual. It shouldn't be ranked light. Right. Ranked doesn't need to be Pro League tryouts. But I do think that – because, like, what they're doing with ranked right now is they really want to give competitive players a place to play the game the way they want to be competitive. And I feel like super competitive players should absolutely have that space to play the game at the highest level that they want to play, which is so what I would like to see. Get rid of newcomer. It's just a Smurf stomping ground anyway, for the most part. It's only got three maps in it and whatever. Get rid of unranked. It's only practice for ranked anyway, and there's very little point to it. And queuing a game in unranked, it takes forever anyway, because there's not a lot of people in it.
Right.
So instead of doing those things that are just kind of like, okay, you experimented with it, whatever, but it's not really working out as intended, make casual again. Open up all the map pools. Get rid of the attack, defense rotation just because ranked has it. Make casual again. Ranked? Leave ranked as a middle ground. You know, it doesn't need to be like super, super competitive and like super content restricted. But for the people that only want to play the most balanced modes on the most, and that's the other thing, put Secure Area and Hostage back into ranked like it used to be. And if you don't want to play those modes, just turn those modes off, because that used to work just fine. But for the people that want to play only bomb, only on Pro League maps with only Pro League rules and have the most competitive game experience possible, and those people absolutely deserve the way to play the game that way, give them pro ranked. So there is a high-end experience to play the game for competition. There's a middle-tier normal ranked, kind of more the way ranked used to be, and then casual is just casual. So whether you're awesome at the game, in between at the game, or you want to play at that highest level, you can experience the game the way that fits your style.
Absolutely. I would be clapping right now, but it'd be really loud.
So what do you want to see change to the game?
I mean, that would be awesome. I like your idea. I think there needs to be better ways for practice. I know a lot of people have been saying this, but a firing range. Some sort of setup that, you know, you can practice with whatever weapon and have like a setup firing range to practice. So you can get better at your flick shots or, you know, your 360, you know, headshots and whatever. But just like a place where you can work on your aim, you know, practice the new guns, you know, practice different, you know. So working on recoil and stuff like that, I feel like that is missing, because in Terrace Hunt, you know, you can only do one thing, and it's kill or be killed. So, you know, you can't, like, you can practice moving through the map, but, like, actually practice using the gun in a session where all you're doing is shooting. Like, I feel like that would be a very beneficial thing. I don't know what I would want, but I would love another game mode. Okay. I don't know what that would be, but I feel like having a fourth game mode would be really cool. And then I also think, you know, as I complained about maps and everything last episode, I think it would be really cool with all of these reworks that they're doing, to make it possible so that it's not always the same objectives.
Oh, so, do you mean, like, in casual, like how casual randomly picks objective and it just feels like it keeps doing the same one over and over? Is that what you mean?
Well, I mean, yes, that's not what I mean, but yes, fix that, please. But what I'm saying is just, like, in general, you know, like, casual map, you have X amount of objective rooms, and those are the only rooms for secure area, or these are the only spots for bomb, or this is the only place for extract hostage. I think that it would be really cool and interesting to be able to, once everything is kind of redone, to add on to that. So give all objective, like, make it so there are more objectives, more rooms for objectives.
So, for instance, like how if you play the same map and you can play it on secure area, but then when you play it on hostage, there's one room that hostage uses that is not available in secure area, but to correct, maybe have that be available in secure area, or to have the one that's not available in hostage be available for hostage because it's right, a secure area room. So making more choices available that way.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I would like that too.
And maybe even to make it easier, take, like, turn it into some sort of rotational thing. You know, season one, these rooms are the rooms for secure area, and bomb and extract hostage, all different, whatever. Season two, rotate stuff around. Now these rooms are the ones for secure area, hostage, and bomb. And, you know, for each season, do something different just to kind of, like, change it up a little bit and give a little more flair to the game, I guess.
Okay.
You know, that way people are forced to kind of change their strategies up.
And I know exactly what you mean, because we have actually played a mode in custom games where we tinkered around with a concept like that, and it was so interesting. Where we would always do it on extract hostage, right? Yeah. And so what we would do is we would have one attacker run into the building where the defenders were, and then they would pick up the hostage, and then the defenders would run to the room they wanted to defend, and then the attacker would drop the hostage off in that room, and then they'd run back outside of the building. We'd give it like a 15 count or a 20 count or whatever, let defense set up, and then, like, essentially, like, okay, now go. And then we would assault, like, this entirely new room, because the hostage was now in, like, this room that was never used for anything, and just see what developed. And it was so interesting.
It was.
Yeah, I could get into that for sure.
Mm-hmm. That would be really fun.
Okay.
Or even having a random, similar to what you just said there, but, like, it would be, you pick a bomb site, or you don't actually pick a bomb site or a hostage site or a security site, and it literally just picks any room. It's just, you're here now. This is where you go. Or if it is bomb, you have it so it's like one bomb's in one room and the other bomb's in the other side of the building. You know, it completely randomizes it. So therefore, it's like, oh crap, we really have to, like, spread out here and figure out how we're going to be securing both of these areas.
And I would think that what we're talking about in this is not balanced for competition at all. So it wouldn't be something that would be in ranked, but it would either be a unique casual mode or maybe a unique event or maybe just limited to a custom game option. It's obviously not something that they would want to do in like pro league levels and ranked levels, but it would be so much fun to just, you know, freshen up the experience. So speaking of freshening up, one thing they did this year, and this is the last topic we'll talk about today, but they freshened up the way that the debris system works, because of course the big problem that we were having was you would go up to a barricade and you would smack it and like the debris would just sort of like the plank would sit there. You could see that it was broken, but it wouldn't necessarily fall. And because it was client side rendered, it would look like it was blocked to you, but then maybe you get shot anyway, because from the other side of that barricade, you were clear as day because it's client rendered. So they fixed that. So now the barricade breaking works differently, and we know about that. It was announced in advance. But one thing that was discovered when playing the test server, and I noticed this firsthand as I went into a variety of the different maps, is they've altered the way that the barricades line up with the windows now. Because there used to be a thing that you could do where you could smack the bottom of a window right below the window sill. And not on all windows, but on a fair amount of windows, you could open up a tiny little pixel peek. It'd be this little narrow gap you could just barely see through, and from the outside, it would look like the window was unbroken, unless you looked real close and saw where the pixel peek was. But this would allow you to kind of see through the barricade, through just this little narrow slit, and then you could see when there's motion on the other side of it, and open up, and the attacker would be like, what, how did they even know I was there, kind of a thing. Well, now they've changed it so that the alignment of those planks makes it so that when you pop out that plank on the bottom sill, the gap is pretty much the size of a plank now, like the width of a plank. It's no longer that little tiny slit anymore. So they've kind of taken away that ability. And that was not a change that they announced that they would be doing with the new debris system, and yet here it is. So, you know, what do we think about how that impacts the game? Maybe strats that we use, or strats that other people use, or, you know, is it more fair? Is it less fair?
I think that this will definitely be interesting. There's going to be positives and negatives. I am sad that those pixel peak spots aren't going to be available anymore. But just from the amount of frustration that I get from getting shot by something that they can see me, but I can't see them, getting rid of solving that problem is good enough for me to not care about the pixel peaks.
I agree. So having that system where you're not able to defend yourself or you're not able to react because there's no, like, if somebody's looking through this narrow slit at the bottom of the window, you don't know they're there. And again, Siege is very information based, so not having that information that there might be somebody peeking that, or like, unless like you have a drone in that room that you put there that you saw them cut out that little slit, so you know to pre-fire, like,
right,
that's a lot of steps to really, for one particular instance that doesn't necessarily happen that much. So getting rid of that completely is really nice. It's the same as the new tactic now is shoot, like, get really close to a wall and have like three or four really close shots, and then you're looking through bullet holes. Granted, though, the difference between that and the narrow slit at the bottom is with the bullet holes, at least you can see, and you can be like, okay, I'm just going to pre-fire that just in case. And you have a visual that they're there. Granted, sometimes it's not as obvious.
Yeah, some textures it's really hard to see.
It is really hard to see, but generally those kind of things are in heavy traffic areas. It's the main thing for those. So having them, like, noticing that there's like a wall that's usually reinforced, not reinforced, 90% of the time you're going to have people just start blasting that wall down. Or like it's going to be an angle that's going to be put up or like really late. So there's not much you could have done about it then anyways. But having that slit gone is a big thing, because now that's just information you don't have to worry about. And right. that was another thing too, because if that's gone, because the barricade goes down to the bottom, a lot of people were pre-breaking windows, and you couldn't tell that they were pre-broken, and then all you had to do was vault through them. And again, that's just information you don't have. So having that hopefully gets rid of that thing as well.
Yeah. So I think anything that makes the game more fair and balanced for both sides is a good thing. I think that this is a bit of a nerf to defense because it's a defense-sided tactic. Like, you can't be outside of a building and do it. It doesn't work. It really only works when you're on the inside looking out. So it's definitely a tactic that defenders would use, favored them, and was you could get the attackers at a real disadvantage that way. So it's a nerf for defense and a buff for the attackers, but it comes at the price of being more fair for the game as a whole. And so I think that that's an important balancing thing. And I say that with a touch of sadness because there is some bittersweetness to that. I loved when I could get those dirty little pixel peaks. Like, it felt so satisfying because I was using my map knowledge to the fullest, that I knew that this spot could give me this, you know, sight line. And then when the person didn't check it, or they weren't expecting it, or they didn't drone me out, that I could kind of like, ha, you know, I got you using my map knowledge. So it was fun to do, but in the spirit of what's best for the health of the game and the player experience, it is definitely a more balanced way to handle the situation, I feel.
It's generally Siege in a nutshell. Like, usually the worst things to do are they feel the best to do. You know what I mean? Like when you, do a run out on somebody. Everybody hates when somebody runs out on somebody. But when you do it and you're able to get somebody, it feels so good. And like you said, it's just one of those things where it's bittersweet, but for the health of the game, yes, it makes more sense. So
Yeah, definitely. Well,
for sure.
I think that we have covered a whole bunch of stuff, and we've brought in a lot of community involvement on this one, answering some questions and some things like that. So I hope that everybody listening has had a chance to, just kind of feel like they were a little bit more involved this time around. And if you want to submit future questions for the show, once again, do please check us out over on the Rainbow Six Radio subreddit, or you can check us out on Twitter as well, as we were talking about earlier in the show. If you want to go back and pick up those Twitter addresses, you can shoot us some messages there too, and we'll be happy to chat with you. And in the meantime, we will be getting ready and planning our next episode, so continue to submit those questions. And this has been Cap Dan, Icy Cat, and Neely Bobber. We will catch you guys next time.
This has been Rainbow Six Radio. Be sure to tune in next time for even more Rainbow Six talk, news, and information.